tune and go up off the rim.
Oh, yeah.
Our very own Skywalker, Elissa Walker-Campbell. As she gets you ready for the 2011 NBA Finals with some of the biggest names in the game.
The Mavs celebration continues this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. And I tell you what, it is always a pleasure when we can catch up with one of the great players that has had a very successful career in the NBA. His team, of course, was the Phoenix Suns. He was an NBA All-Star, NBA Rookie of the Year. My favorite part of his resume, though, is to point out that he is a former Sooner great. It's wonderful to have with us number 33, Alvin Adams. How are you, Alvin?
Good morning, fellow Sooner. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding. And, you know, where in the world do you start? I mean, there are so many highlights from this remarkable run and just fascinating series with the Mavs and the Heat. What stands out the most in your mind when you reflect back on what they were able to accomplish and reach that ultimate goal?
Well, if I can first say congratulations to the Dallas Mavericks. Here, working for the Suns, I've been with them 36 years now as both a player and in the facility management side. They've come to be our biggest rival, I believe. We all dislike greatly the Lakers and the Spurs, but it's really because we're jealous of them out here in Arizona because they've won championships. And you know what? Now we have to be jealous of the Dallas Mavericks. But like I said, congratulations. Here's what stands out to me. The Dallas Mavericks, a team, the best team in the NBA. How exciting for a team concept to win a team sport, the sport of basketball. You know, there's a lot of great talent in this league, and of course, the media always touts the players, much more so than the teams. But how refreshing to see a deep bench and a great coaching staff, including Terry Stotts, another OU Sooner, win it all. And, you know, after that Lakers series, of course, that was a big key, not just beating the Lakers, sweeping them. And then we all said, well, we knew Dirk was good, but wow, he is really the best closer in basketball. You used to think it was Kobe. But Dirk scores, 10 points every fourth quarter. I don't know when he's missed a free throw last in a fourth quarter. I'm not sure when he's missed a field goal in the fourth quarter. And I love watching their bench. You know, Jason Terry went to school out here in Tucson at the U of A, so a lot of us have followed his career. Jason Kidd absolutely was one of my favorite players in a Phoenix Suns uniform. The way he treated employees when he walked through the building, he'd park his car. All the guys that played here have been nice and say, hey, hi, how you doing? Jason would stop and say, hey, did you watch the game last night? Did you enjoy the game? He would carry on conversations. I recognize that when he played for us, however many years ago that was, 8 or 9 years ago, and I'm excited to see him win. And Sean Marion's always been a Suns fan favorite, so we're happy for him. I'm jealous of him. I was hoping we would win before a championship before the Mavericks, but they were in the finals this year. We weren't, so we were all pulling for them out here in Arizona.
There really are just so many fascinating storylines from this remarkable season and the players, but you just talked about the clutch closer, and that, of course, is Dirk Nowitzki. The fact that he scored in the fourth quarter 62 points in the final says so much about him. Where do you rank this guy? I mean, we obviously know that he is a future Hall of Famer, but he really has cemented his legacy, and he's got that ring to show for it.
Well, there was a lot of that talk going on in the finals on TV and Coach Carlisle and, wait a minute, he's not one of the five best. Maybe he's one of the 10 best. I don't usually go to those rankings, but we certainly sit around and go, who's your top five team of all time? You know, is it Magic or is it Kobe? Is it Kareem or is it Wilt or is it Shaq? And certainly championship ring has to go with any of the greats. So now Dirk's got one. I don't know why the Mavs wouldn't be contenders again next year. So he is, when you can close like that and you can shoot like that and you can stay in the game, because we know there's some big guys in the league in recent history that you almost didn't even want to leave them out on the floor because they couldn't hit a free throw. And you know what his weakness used to be? Dirk's weakness, I always thought, was I thought he was a really weak defensive player years ago, 4, 5, 6, you know, years ago. And every rookie coming in is a weak defensive player. But his defense is good. He knows where to go. I thought the Mavs' defense was outstanding. I thought Jason Kidd was outstanding against LeBron James. And Dirk's going after rebounds. And I thought Tyson Chandler brought so much to that team this year. And I have to keep repeating it. Congratulations to the best team in the league.
And let's talk some more even about Jason Kidd, because if you look at his defensive assignments over the past three series, I mean, he had to face Kobe. You know, Russell Westbrook, that's not easy. There was times he'd have to switch out and go out on Kevin Durant. But, you know, Dwayne Wade, LeBron, I mean, at 38 years of age, he's the oldest guard to win an NBA championship, and how he was able to gut it out and grit it out on the defensive end, I thought that really stood out and shined pretty bright.
Yeah, you know what's great about that? I hope our 38-year-old player, Steve Nash, watch closely, because he's got to fire him up to go.
Absolutely.
That's the way it'll be done. And I'm sure Jason would be the first to admit that if he had to play any one of those guys one-on-one, he may not even score. But with the team play, back to that word again, team, that with the job that Rick Carlisle and his staff did, the way those guys were tied together like a, you know, puppet strings. Jason, I mean, the way he bodied up, the way he kept LeBron in front of him. I mean, how many dunks did LeBron James have in the final? I don't remember, certainly not double digits, I don't think, dunks. I'm going to say maybe five or six. I don't know. I didn't see every minute of every game. I saw most of it, but
he really minimized his ability to get untracked and to get to the rim.
He did.
Hey, the great Alvin Adams is with us this weekend on the Big East Sports Show. Of course, he spent his entire NBA career with the Suns. He was an NBA All-Star in 76, NBA Rookie of the Year, and of course, a Sooner sensation. And just reflect on Rick Carlisle. You had highlighted him just momentarily. Talk about just his game management and just the in-game adjustments that he was able to make. I mean, he was dealing with so many injuries, but how about the gutsy move of starting J.J. Barea?
I know. You know, I really don't watch coaches' moves that much, but then you hear the great announcers on TV talking about it, and you kind of nod and go, yeah, you know, Stevenson, if I'm correct in remembering, he started most of the playoff games.
Yes.
And I can't remember which series. I think it was maybe both Portland and Oklahoma City. J.J. had some big games, this little spider, just, you know, water spider zipping through everybody. And one game when he started, I didn't see the first couple minutes of the game. I went in and turned the TV on. I go, oh, J.J. Barea is in. I wonder if Stevenson twisted his ankle or got two fouls. And then we're talking about, well, this is a coaching change. And how well did that work? And I don't know the confidence of any of these players. I mean, I know Jason Kidd and Sean Marion. I don't know if J.J. is the type of guy that needs to be in there. But there's another thing. I don't see any problem guys on that Dallas team. I don't see anybody looks like they're going to pout if they didn't get to start looking at, hey, what's the goal here? Hey, back a few years ago, Dirk and Jason got to the finals, but there's 10 new guys on the team now, and what a great team effort.
Well, and you know, Alvin, I have to ask you, you were a rookie on the Suns team when they made it to the 1976 NBA Finals. Did this bring back a lot of great memories from you and, you know, just that improbable run to make it all the way to the big game?
Well, we were really underdogs. I don't know how many people, other than maybe Mark Cuban and the players and the coaching staff, maybe you too, chose Dallas to get to the finals this year when the season started. You guys were certainly contenders, but I'm not sure how many experts picked them to get to the finals. My rookie year, no one even picked us to make the playoffs, so it was quite different, and that was almost four decades ago. I barely remember it. All I do know is our coaches, our two coaches, back then there were only two coaches, they had us prepared every game at the end of that season. I'm going to say the last 20 games, and every playoff game we went into, they just had us thinking one game at a time. It wasn't thinking, ooh, gee, if we get past this opponent, we might get to play so-and-so next. Every game we went into, we had a plan, we had a great scouting report, and we felt like we could win any game we entered, whether it was against the Lakers and their new acquisition that year, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, or the Sonics in the first round, or the defending world champion Golden State Warriors in the second round, or even the Celtics in the final, who swept us during the season, because there were a lot less teams there. I think we played the Celtics six times that year, and they beat us every game, and we made it a thrilling series, and the famous Game 5 triple overtime ended up being a great series. So my point is the preparation. We were all prepared. We all had the same vision. And we got to the finals, and we didn't win it like the Mavs did this year, but it was quite an accomplishment, and we exceeded our potential and our expectations that year, and so did the Mavs this year.
Between the Phoenix Suns and the Boston Celtics, I guess eight players in that game went on to be head coaches, and Pat Riley, was he one of your teammates?
Pat Riley was my locker mate. He was a locker next to me, and what I remember about Pat was basically he didn't play a lot, but I remember one thing he told me one of my first road trips, might have been my first road trip. He said, your wife's sitting at home, you be real nice to her when you get back, you bring her flowers. And I just remember that one. That's one of the few things I remember somebody saying, and I knew how much he loved his wife, Chris, and they're still married, and my wife and I are, you know, married 36 years this summer, and I just remember that one bit of information from Pat Riley, and he's been a great coach and leader of that organization, and the Lakers when he was there, and the Knicks, and that's what I remember mostly about Pat Riley, was just giving that little tip about caring for your wife and coming home to her after a road trip.
I mean, it's hard to believe, too, Alvin, as we get ready to wrap up our interview, you have been a part of the Suns organization for 36 years. Tell all of our listeners, what are you doing now within the organization?
Okay, well, real quickly, while I played for the Suns, I was going to school at Arizona State University, just a few miles down the road here from downtown Phoenix in Tempe, Arizona, and I was studying pre-architecture. My interests were in architecture, real estate development, and construction, and the year I retired was the year Jerry Colangelo, he'd been the general manager for the first 20 years of the Suns, he bought the team. He put together local ownership, bought the team. His first order of business was to build a new facility for the Suns, and I asked if I could join that design and development team. I'm not an architect. I didn't go to the College of Architecture and get a degree, but my interests are still in those areas, architecture and construction. So I helped design and build this building and then the ballpark where the Diamondbacks play, and I continue to be in the facility management side. So I'm in charge of the home of the Suns, the U.S. Airway Center, and the Phoenix Mercury.
And you probably never get any downtime, do you?
I am able to balance life and work. I love coming to work, and I love going home.
Absolutely. Listen, Alvin, continued success, and I wish we could talk for another 15 minutes or so, but we are flat out of time. And happy Father's Day this weekend, too.
Oh, thank you, and congratulations one last time. Until we play the Mavs next year. Congratulations on the NBA championship this year.
Thank you so much. We'll catch up with you again real soon, Alvin.
The Big E Sports Show with Elissa Walker-Campbell is the biggest names in sports. Delivering the insight. Delivering the insight you won't find anywhere else. Anywhere else. Like TCU head football coach Gary Patterson. Texas A&M great R.C. Slocum. And Big E's regular guest of ESPN Radio, better known as the Double Nickel, Jason Peter. The Big E Sports Show with Elissa Walker-Campbell. Miss one episode and you miss the game.
His goal?
100 yards rushing.
Our goal? To keep him in bounds.
Headed to the sidelines. Can he stay in bounds?
While he covers the play, we cover his heart with the Word of God. Because with the Bible as his playbook,
touchdown!
He is certain to keep in bounds. Join the Fellowship of Christian Athletes as we strive to put the heart and soul in sports by impacting the world for Jesus Christ. To learn more, contact us at fca.org. That's fca.org.
The Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell just got bigger. Featuring former defensive star and three-time national champion at Nebraska and NFL player Jason Peter. Jason Peter. Under the helmet. With Jason Peter on the Big E Sports Show with host Elissa Walker-Campbell.
Elissa Walker-Campbell, we are back this weekend on the Big E Sports Show, and the good times, well, they just continue to roll. Yes, we're celebrating the World Championship by the Dallas Mavericks. We're also celebrating with our good friend Jason Peter, Husker great, during our Under the Helmet segment. He has a brand new baby in the Peter family, and we want to say congratulations to you, Jason. Happy Father's Day, and welcome aboard. It's great to have you back.
Yeah, it's great to be here. A little break from burping babies and the crying and the changing of the diapers. You forget, you know, it's been 2 years since our last child, and my wife keeps reminding me, you're holding the baby wrong, you're burping her wrong, everything now I'm doing wrong, but it's coming back to me here.
And another baby girl, and I understand she was a couple inches longer than your first daughter, right?
Yeah, she was 21 inches, and when we had our first daughter, she was 19, and we thought that was long, but she's got these long piano fingers, and I don't know obviously where she'll go to school, but if she sticks around here, I think the Nebraska volleyball team probably got a little bit better, and hopefully the golf team, but the football team, the D-line, is they're going to have to wait until hopefully the next one.
Hey, Jason Peter with us this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. It's a special program. As I said, we're celebrating the Mavs, the 2011 NBA champions. And Jason, I know you were following the series fairly closely. I know you've had a lot of things going on, but what was your impressions and observations from just this world championship run?
It was great to watch. I mean, we talked about kind of the David versus Goliath type scenario, but I think when you look at Dallas, you look at a team. You look at a team, and so much was made this year of Miami and the Big Three, and how the NBA is really a superstar league, and you've got to have, you know, at least two superstars on your team to win a championship. And I think Dallas, in a lot of ways, they defy that. I think you have one legit superstar in Dirk, and certainly Jason Kidd was a superstar, but yeah, he's past his prime, and I don't know if you look at anybody else on that team and put him in the same type of category that you would a LeBron and a D-Wade. So I like watching a team win, and you know, it really, I think, stands not just in basketball, in any sport, any team sport. It is ultimately about the team. You know, I always bring everything back to my experiences at Nebraska. We never had top 20 recruiting classes back in the 90s, and we ripped off three national championships. And now, you know, so much is made of, you know, having the top-ranked guy or the best player at this, the best player at that. When it comes to a team sport, the best team is the one that usually is standing there in the end. And this is, you know, the case with Dallas. And you just got to love the hard work that they put in and the way that they continued to fight back. I mean, it wasn't an easy road for them. I think, you know, you go all the way back to, what was it, the Portland series that came down to
yes.
the end, and I think it was how many fourth quarter comebacks?
Six
over the course of the playoffs. So this was a team that was on a mission, and they were destined. They just kind of refused to accept anything except the championship.
Jason, you're spot on, because I too had such a sincere appreciation for Dallas, you know, just being committed to doing it the right way. I mean, team basketball, we heard ABC's analyst Mark Jackson even share in that Game 6 telecast that, you know, there is no I in team, and I know that's cliche, but I know you understand that, as you had just mentioned, winning three national championships at the University of Nebraska. I mean, it takes that great team effort and chemistry and, you know, passing the ball and playing unselfish basketball, and it all came together.
It really does. And it's so funny, because you think Mark Cuban and how eccentric he is, and he's always out there, and you'd think he's the guy who's going to go out and he's going to pay for five superstars, and he didn't. I mean, he's got, you know, one guard that's over the hill. He's got you know, the German superstar, but everybody else kind of were these role players, and you know, I think you have situations like that ultimately lead to other guys becoming superstars. Now, you know, whether Jason Terry continues to step up to the mic like he did, and I mean, that was the difference for me, was you had guys that were not scared for the big moment. These guys weren't scared to throw up a three when the game's on the line. I mean, everything was just clutch, and that's, you know, that I think ultimately decides, you know, who's going to be standing there in the end, is when the lights are shining the brightest and the moment in the game is the biggest, are your other guys going to be able to play like superstars? And in Dallas, that's what they did.
I'm glad, Jason, you talk about Dirk Nowitzki because he was so remarkable. We've talked about many times just the resolve and resiliency of this team, but how in Game 4 against Miami, playing with a triple-digit fever and, you know, his fingers messed up and hits the driving layup. I mean, this is a guy that has just showed, you know, that he has a heart of a champion.
Well, it's that German work ethic, of course. We both have it. But, yeah, it's, you know, you hear stories like that all the time. I mean, Jordan, you know, when he, I forget exactly what game it was, but he also went through something like that with, you know, the playing with the flu. And great players, you know, they don't let stuff like that affect them. I think, and sometimes it almost works to your advantage because the player is obviously aware of how sick he is, and he's saying to himself, I've got to produce that much more. I've got to put that much more effort into it so that I'm playing at a level that's comparable to when I'm healthy. And you know, I think when players kind of go into a game with that mindset, you know, ultimately I think sometimes they end up playing better than they've ever played. And not to say that was his best game ever, but he played at a high level. And then when you talk about the games that followed and you know, LeBron and Dwayne Wade kind of, you know, poking fun at it and coughing and doing that whole thing, and they tried to back themselves out of that. But, you know, I got to agree with Dirk. He's, you know, been in this league how long?
13 years.
He's never once, not once ever used an injury as an excuse. He's never, you know, tried to have the media play up something, you know, whether it is an excuse for why he played poorly or why he played, you know, that much better. He's never used health as an issue or as an excuse. And, you know, I got to imagine that fueled the fire, not just in Dirk, but in his teammates as well.
Jason Peter, you're listening to him this weekend on the Big E Sports Show. We want to direct you to our radio website. That is eradiosports.com. This is a very special weekend. Of course, it's Father's Day weekend. And, you know, Jason, you were talking about LeBron James. What's your observation? I mean, there were so many blunders that these guys even shared, you know, in post-game comments. But just the lack of production overall, I mean, he certainly did not come through and shine the brightest when the Heat needed him the most.
He didn't. And obviously there's a lot of criticism out there. The Miami Heat are going to win championships. You know, their day will come. I think, you know, maybe it won't. My guess is that it would, just with more experience with, you know, the big three playing together. You know, that stuff takes time. I don't think, you know, you can necessarily just throw a bunch of superstars together and expect them to produce championships. I think the talent level in all sports just continues to get better and better because you have kids that are just training towards these goals now at such a young age. And, you know, with everything else that goes into it, you know, the off-the-field type training. But it was disappointing, I think, for people that, you know, want to put LeBron in this category along with the Jordans and along with the Magic Johnsons and the Birds and all those guys. And you know, the one thing that all those guys have, they have championships. And, you know, it's hard for a lot of people to understand, myself included, because you're talking about a guy who has won two MVPs?
Right.
You know, those players are usually the players that shine in the big moments. Now, you know, going into this series, I think a lot of people were saying LeBron is that guy. I mean, he was making some of those shots. He was the guy that I think you could count on in the fourth quarter. But, you know, a playoff game isn't the same as a championship series. You know, the lights are certainly brighter in that final game or whatever series, whether it's a hockey game or basketball or baseball. I think when you're talking about a championship series, there is nothing bigger. I mean, that's ultimately what you play the game for. And for LeBron, I just think that he's going to have to live through an off season of a lot of criticism and critique.
Well, and I might add, you know, we had Stacey King on our program a couple weeks back. He's obviously very familiar with the Heat and what they did at the Chicago Bulls. But he talked about LeBron James, Dwayne Wade. These were two of the best closers in the game. And the fact that they were not able to get it done really says something about just what a magnificent job that the Dallas Mavs did in terms of their zone defense and how they completely shut them down. We are quickly running out of time, Jason. I know this is a super short segment, but we wanted you to quickly weigh in on Terrell Pryor. He's apologizing for his actions that led him to leave Ohio State. Do you buy it?
No, not really. I think this is all, you know, this was done kind of behind closed doors. He goes out and, you know, he hires Drew Rosenhaus, who certainly has, I think, some character issues, or people would at least question at times his character and the way that he does things. You know, I think for someone like Terrell Pryor, who has these issues surrounding him, you'd think that you'd want to go maybe for an agent that is a little more clean cut. Now, I don't know if there is one out there, but I'm sure you could find one that maybe fits that bill a little bit better than Drew. But, you know, he's apologizing to his teammates and to Jim Tressel. And for me, I didn't think he needed to apologize to Tressel. You know, Tressel is someone who probably should be apologizing to everybody else. Ohio State let this go on. You know, your star quarterback doesn't go and cash $40,000 worth of checks in Columbus, which is a town that's football crazed, and your head coach or somebody on staff not realizing this and taking care of it. But, you know, whatever. He'll go to the NFL. I don't know if he'll be a superstar. My guess would be not. I guess we'll all find out what happens. It's sad, and it's not just happening at Ohio State. I think it's in a lot of places. So the NCAA, I think, needs to step up here and start cracking down.
I don't know about you, Jason, but I'm ready to close the book on it and just move forward. And it's hard to believe that the start of college football season will be here before you know it. We're out of time. JP, we look forward to catching up with you next week. And again, congratulations and God's best.
Thanks, E.
You bet. We're going to step aside. Much more straight ahead here in just a moment.